You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with therapist and author of the self-compassion workbook, Joy Johnson. We've been talking about self-compassion and some of the challenges to that and how to live more self-compassionately. Joy, I would imagine when you work with some clients, you can see from a mile away that these people are just way too hard on themselves. What are some of the first steps to bring that to their awareness?
So I think one of the big first questions that often I ask folks, or that you'll see in the self-compassion work, is, you know, do you talk to yourself like you talk to other folks that you care about, and you have this, you know, inner self-dialogue? And yeah, a lot of folks will, once they start, you know, it's just been running, it's been the default that's been running in the back of their mind for so long, that being asked that question and starting to think about it is pretty, it's like, oh wow, I didn't realize how much I was doing that, how harsh I was to myself. And so I always also with that want to say, you know, we want to use self-compassion even there. So when you start to notice, it can be kind of intense to start to notice that when you first learn about self-compassion, because that's the first thing you'll do. You'll start to notice how critical you are of yourself. And then you're like, I don't know what to do next, though, because this is just what's happening for me. And so, you know, you can always start with just, oh, wow, no wonder I feel so stressed, or wow, this is a really hard moment when I start to call myself names or beat myself up in this way. And then I usually will offer Kristin Neff's self-compassion break, which is a mantra that, you know, I would memorize and then just say to myself when I started to notice this coming up. So it's, this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is a normal part of life. May I be kind to myself in this moment. May I give myself the compassion that I need. And that really encompasses all the components of self-compassion, kind of serves as a distraction from those really critical thoughts. And then it would start to remind me, like, oh, like, what if I did experiment with being a little kinder to myself in this moment? What would that be like? So yeah, it's always like it hits you like a ton of bricks, like when you start to realize what, you know, your self-critic is doing and saying. So then I always like to add in the mantra as an initial tool for navigating that.
That's great. And that's super helpful for me in terms of thinking about what to offer other people sometimes, you know? And so, because I think I see a lot of, I have a big ego, so I'm not usually that critical of myself. And so I can't relate to this piece, but I see it a lot in friends and family. And I like that idea of just giving them something to work with to stop that automatic messaging. So thank you. I keep going back to this caregiver piece, right? Because I think it's an important component to our show, obviously. And one of the terms that we hear a lot in the caregiver world is caregiver burnout. And I'm seeing an obvious correlation here, right? That we'll probably have less caregiver burnout if we have more self-compassion. But I'm not sure I understand yet or can articulate. Maybe I should ask you, actually. Could you please articulate to our listeners, what's the best way to bridge that gap, to bring more self-compassion into the situation around caregiver burnout?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a big question, and it's nuanced and different for everyone. There, you know, I will say there's research. So this is really true too in the therapist and mental health world. There's a ton of burnout, and we really want to, you know, we love our work, right? We really want to care for people, and we want to make that as sustainable as possible. And so it can look like a lot of different things, right? But I think bringing self-compassion into these moments or into your day-to-day, right, with maybe readjusting your expectations of yourself, or when you know, there's so many variables happening for caregivers and so many things that could go wrong, and I could imagine there's a lot of stress built up in trying to avoid those things, or trying to like make sure, you know, you have a grip on everything and it feels like things don't fall apart. And there's a side of it, you know, like we were talking about with broken systems, where like things might go wrong. We really, you know, at some point they are going to go wrong, even if you're doing everything that you can, they're going to, you know, something's going to happen. And it's, you know, I think most caregivers definitely have the tools and the resources within themselves to navigate something when it happens. And I don't at all want to minimize, you know, when the harm that can be done when the person you're caring for doesn't get what they need, but also that there are ways to repair that. There are ways that you can meet that and say, okay, this thing went wrong. That's going to happen. That's okay. And what can I do next? Again, to support myself and support the people around me. And if you're just burning the candle at both ends constantly, and you're never stopping to set some boundaries or take care of yourself in some way. Pedicures and massages are great, but even just as we're talking about today, like simple things is just like giving yourself a little hug or calling a friend to get support instead of just trying to deal with it for yourself. I think those are really actually radical. They sound simple, but they're radical ways to really think about, how can I bring more support in? Because what I'm doing is incredibly difficult. And what's expected of me is, there's really not a lot of great tools and resources in our society to support me in the way that I need. So what are ways that I can bring that in as best as I can? And your care, your well-being is so important to this work being sustainable and so important to taking care of, Liza and Kristen, both of your kids, and for all the folks that are listening, the folks that they're taking care of too. If they need you, they need you to also be okay and take care of yourself. And that's super important.
I think that's
a great message.
It goes back to the putting the oxygen mask on yourself first, which I think we find ourselves saying every week. And I like how you mentioned how, some of these things are simple, and some of the steps are actually simple. And I think when they are simple, people think that's too simple or that can't work, or it has to be a complex, big undertaking, change of whatever. But it's really stopping and pausing and noticing in some of these moments, which kind of leads into the mindfulness piece of it. And I know mindfulness and self-compassion go hand in hand. And I had pulled something up on mindfulness, which is noticing what is happening while it's happening around you, using all five of your senses: sound, sight, touch, smell, and taste. Can you tell us a little bit about how mindfulness impacts your ability to be more self-compassionate?
Yeah, I think those are great. That's a great definition of it. And yeah, it's really just this awareness of what's happening. So a lot of what we've been talking about today is ways that shame and self-criticism can affect you. And a lot of times that goes unnoticed, right? Or it gets to the point, Liza, you're talking about, you're so stressed and you start having all these physiological and physical manifestations and syndromes. And so the awareness really allows us to start to notice, when this situation goes wrong, or when I forgot my child's appointment, or when whatever it is, when this happened, what starts to happen within me? How do I respond? With the work I do with clients now and the body work, it's like, where in your body do you start to notice this emotion, or where do you feel the shame? How does it feel when when you don't talk down to yourself, when this thing happens? So bringing the awareness gives us so much more information. And then it also allows us to start to be like, I've had a lot of chronic syndromes too, and I can just not even notice what's happening in my body until it's so far down the line that, I need intervention, I need medication, I need something like that. So with that example, it's, what if I notice that my, this thing is tense, in the beginning, and I offer that, I stretch it, I offer, stretch, I get really tense in my hips. So what if I stretched today and I rolled out my hips and I, took care of it in a way that would really help avoid holding this tension in my body so long that it then starts to affect me in a bigger way. So the mindfulness allows us to kind of hone in on what we really need and what would be helpful in the moment.
Yeah, that's great.
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
Super helpful. And you started to talk a little bit about yourself, and that's kind of what we like to get into our last segment with our guests, is some of our powerful questions where we sort of become the therapist for the therapist. And so I'm curious about what drove you to actually produce the workbook.
Yeah. To be honest with you, someone came to me and asked me if I wanted to write a book about self-compassion. So I would say that's like the most obvious way that happened. But I guess my decision to write it was that work feels so personal and important to me. Because like I said, I've held on to a lot of, I have a really strong harsh critic. That's kind of my natural way of being. And so that was something that I really had to navigate and found to be helpful for me, and then led me to be able to get the support that I needed, or offer myself the support that usually I'd be like, I just have to push through this thing. I'm going to just like be tense and stressed and try to grip onto everything and avoid anything going wrong. And self-compassion has really helped me, I don't know, to just walk through the world in a different way, to not be so on edge, to not feel so burdened by, you know, what could happen, but to be able to respond what happens when it happens and get the support I need when I don't feel like I can do it on my own.
I love
that's
using.
That's great. And I was going to ask you, what are you the most proud of? But it sounds like creating this book, right? And it sounds like you're living what you preach.
Yeah, I try to, and I hope so. And I would say I'm the most proud of my own personal work, my own personal trauma healing, and building my own personal self-compassion practice. And then my goal is just that naturally affects the work that I do.
And I just want to go back to the workbook, because having that resource can be so helpful, especially if this is a new concept to you, or you don't know where to start, or of course, the obvious, you don't know what you don't know. So I want to make sure, before we run out of time, where could listeners go to get your workbook?
It's on Amazon, the Self-Compassion Workbook. It's also, if you want to support your local bookstore, you can ask them to special order it for you. So pretty much any place that sells books should be able to get it to you, even if it's not in stock.
And I'm saying that right, that it, the title of it is the Self-Compassion Workbook.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, I should probably add, you can go to my website, therapywithjoy.com, and get more information that way, or reach out to me from there.
Yeah. Is there anything else? We've thrown a lot of questions at you, Joy, but now we also like to give you the opportunity, the microphone's in your hand. Is there anything else you want to promote about your work, or any final words that you'd like to share with us?
You had a question that I don't think we got to, and I just wanted caregivers to know that, you know, that they're enough, that there's those of us that see how hard they're working, and that they deserve care too. And so if anyone is hearing this and really wants to learn more, you're free to, like I said, go to my website and reach out. I'm always happy to talk about all of this. And know that if you hit a snag, if you're like, I don't know if this is working for me, that's totally okay. Self-compassion can meet you right where you are, and can still be helpful, even if you're a little skeptical or you're not sure if it's working.
Yes, you got to be willing to give yourself self-compassion while you're learning how to be self-compassionate, right?
Yes. Yeah. I know. I'm like, I always just go back to self-compassion, but that is the most helpful in my experience.
Well, thank you so much, Joy. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And I want you just to say your website one more time, just so everyone's got it.
Yeah, so it's therapywithjoy.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you, Joy. I really learned a lot already, and I can't wait to dive into the workbook.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks. We'll be right back to talk a little bit about our learnings and wonderings from this episode.